on this edition of The Self-Publishing Show.
And there's like a VIP level where they get to read what I'm writing as I write it.
Wow.
And that's weird.
Publishing is changing. No more gatekeepers. No more barriers. No one standing between you and your readers. Do you want to make a living from your writing? Join indie bestseller Mark Dawson and first-time author James Blatch as they shine a light on the secrets of self-publishing success. This is The Self-Publishing Show. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
Hello and welcome. It's The Self-Publishing Show with me, James Blatch.
And me, Mark Dawson.
Welcome. It's a Friday. We are talking all things indie publishing, particularly marketing. We have an inspiring story today about somebody who couldn't afford to get the heating fixed in their car not that long ago and has posted £500,000 of revenue in the last 22 months subsequently. Thanks, actually, as you'll find out in the interview, to you, Mark, to your course.
Well, partly. Yeah, she was Britt Andrews, who was an SPF Foundation winner 2 years ago, and has, so basically that means she gets a little bit of money that she can put towards services and things at Readsy, and also gets the SPF courses 101 and ads. And Britt's done fabulously well, probably the kind of the most successful foundation winner that we've had. And
we've had a few.
So, yeah. We certainly have had a few. And but seeing her in, we saw her in Vegas for 20 books in last November, and she was doing really well then, and it's going from strength to strength. So it sounds pretty trite to say that, but it's kind of, this is one of the best things about doing this, is that we could say writers who clearly have a lot of talent as writers, but for one reason or another, financial perhaps, or just not able, or don't know what to do when they actually finish writing, to see writers in that situation go from, as you say, not being able to fix the heating in the car to having six figure on the way to seven figure annual salaries. That's just remakable.
$50,000 a month she was doing, I think, when we talked to her in Vegas.
Yeah, that's right. And that's a huge amount of money. So yeah. It's really lovely to see that, and makes us pleased. We've been trying to get, Lucy's been on my back for about 18 months trying to get Britt on the podcast.
Yeah.
And Britt's quite hard to pin down. So I'm pleased that you managed to speak to her.
It was lovely talking. And Britt is one of these people who follows Facebook Ads for Authors course, implements it line by line. And same as I did for Fuse Books, and it taught me how to generate income for books, which is, you know, what we set out to do with that course. We should say this is going out on Friday next week. So you have, if you were interested in the Ads for Authors course, 2 days left. Now, they're secret days because officially it closed on Wednesday, but we're going to keep it open till Sunday night, because if you listen to us regularly, you'll know that there's always people who contact us like 2 days after the course is closed. Oh, I missed it. So we always keep it open until Sunday night. So it'll actually be open for 48 hours from the launch of this podcast. Go to Facebook, go to selfpublishingformula.com/ads for authors to check out the golden juice that's got it going for so many people, including me. Okay, what else are we talking about today? We have the SPF Drinks event. I've posted into the Facebook community, the SPF community group, some details on that and some pictures from the shenanigans that have gone on in previous years. Nothing incriminatory, I should say, Mark. I do have some incriminating photographs of you, but I haven't posted those publicly yet. And what else are we talking about today? We have a blog available today. It's always launched on a Friday. How to evaluate regular freelancers. The irony of this blog is it's been written for us by a freelancer. So, Daniel, I'll read your instructions and evaluate you. That's how that works.
Exactly. Yes, very good. Very good.
Go on.
I'm just looking through to see if we had any patrons to announce today, and I don't think we do, but one thing we do have is, remember last week we weren't sure whether Susan Baker, Old Man Smithers and Kimberly Gibson were from Texas.
Yes.
We thought they can't all be from Texas, but they are all from Texas.
So, yes.
Catherine picked up, apparently, this is basically, it's Tom's fault because he didn't use semicolons properly. I think either that or we didn't read them correctly.
I think there's a chasm opening between Tom and Catherine on the way that the patrons are posted into our Slack channel. And Tom's done it in a different way from Catherine. And Catherine is now marshalling her armies to say, this is my turf.
Yes. So anyway, those three, thank you once again to them and hello to, they're all in Texas. So
yeah,
we like Texas.
Deep in the heart of Texas. Okay, right. I think we've talked about everything we need to talk about and we've previewed Britt Andrews. So why don't we hear from Britt, absolutely fantastic writer, real joyous interview. I enjoyed it very much. And here she is.
This is The Self-Publishing Show. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
Britt Andrews, welcome to The Self-Publishing Show. We've met in person before, and you are no stranger to the self-publishing formula.
No, I'm not.
Because we'll come on to that in a moment. But why don't you start by you introducing yourself and your writing?
Okay, so I'm Britt Andrews. I write paranormal reverse harem romance. So I got started during the pandemic after being laid off from my hospital job. And my whole family was on lockdown. I had, three young kids. I was like, if there's ever a time for me to actually try to pull this off, like, now's the time. Book of my series in the 3 months that I was off work. And then I published the first one October 1st of 2020. So we're coming up on 2 years now since I published that. It was crazy.
Great. So you just froze in the middle of that, but I've got got most of it. But you published your first book when?
I published my first book October 1st, 2020.
Okay, so it really was a lockdown project.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
So you got laid off, and did you then think, well, I'm just going to give this a go as an author, or did you get another job and run this alongside that?
So I actually went back to that job after 3 months. Once, business picked back up again, they brought me back on. But when I started it, it was like, I'm going to go out of my mind if I don't occupy my brain. And I was like, so this will just be a fun hobby for me. And if I make a couple bucks at it, then that's cool. But I wasn't expecting anything really to happen with it, to be honest.
It seems odd to get laid off from a hospital job in a pandemic.
Yeah. So the department I worked in was behavioral health. And I worked as their program assistant. So I did a lot of like tracking data and stuff like this, but our clients came in like in person for mental health treatment. So when it was locked down, I mean, everybody was just scared, they didn't want to come or they just wanted to stay in their houses, which was fine. I mean, that's what you're supposed to do, but yeah.
Wasn't great for the way the department worked. Okay. All right. So anyway, you've not looked back, which is great. And part of that journey along the way was to apply to the foundation here at SPF.
Yes. Yes. So I saw a post, I believe it was in the 20 Books group. L. Thorpe actually won the scholarship the year before I did. And she posted in there, hey, this is closing soon. It was really helpful for me. You should check it out. And so I did, and it was the day before your admissions were closing.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was like, I was back at my job then, and I looked it up on my lunch break and I typed up my little submission right then. So I was like, I know if I wait till I get home, my kids are going to be all over me and, I won't have time to do it. So I just went for it.
Yeah, and you were awarded it. And was it the Lucy Score sponsor slot? I thought it was. So yeah. Lucy, obviously a very successful romance writer, and she does sponsor romance. I'm going to talk about your writing in a moment, but let's just for a second, because I know we're getting towards that time of year in the autumn where we start turning our minds to the foundation, who's going to be selected for 2023. So not a bad opportunity just to flag it up that it exists. So what difference did it make to you, Britt?
It made a huge difference, having access to the courses, because I honestly knew nothing. Like I said, I started this as a hobby and I was, a very avid reader. So I knew a little bit about self-publishing, but I had no idea the level that's required from an author. Like, this is not just sitting down and writing a book. If you really want this to become a career, there's all these other, you know, aspects that are to it, and you have to learn. So I know that I never would have been able to afford the classes at that point in time. So that made a huge difference. And just, you know, hearing that there's people out there who believe in your work, like they read it and they're like, okay, this girl has something here. Like, let's take a chance and let's bring her into this and we'll see how everything goes.
Yeah. And just to fast forward, how has everything gone? Where are you now?
It's been amazing. So just real quick, you know, prior to publishing, we almost lost our house to foreclosure. I was driving a 1996 Camry that was not only gold, but also silver.
Oh, yeah. You know? A bit like, is it Better Call Saul? He thought it was a step up in his life and his car was just one color.
Right. And mine was two. So, like, you know, two top colors right there.
Yeah.
But I mean, I drove that car one winter here without heat because I couldn't afford the $700 to get it fixed. So that's where I came from, where I am now. I've just cleared $500,000 in 22 months.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, congratulations. And we're a very, very happy organization to be a small part of that. Thank you to the two Lucys. Actually, Lucy Score has sponsored your particular slot, and Lucy Dawson, who does a lot of hard work in the background for the foundation, and all our other foundation sponsors. There are lots of slots available now, but you do need to apply, and you can do that on our website, selfpublishingformula.com/foundation, or at least just go to selfpublishingformula.com and there's a tab at the top. So that's brilliant. I'm very excited for you. So I want to hear a bit more about the writing and your audience and the readers that you found. So paranormal romance. Do you know, I've asked this before on the podcast, and I feel bad for asking it again, but I just have never got around to reading a paranormal romance, and I still haven't quite got my head around what the tropes of that genre are.
So paranormal is anything like magic, witches, shifters, vampires, demons, like anything paranormal. So
okay.
It's just like a romance story, but with magic.
Okay. So I know Lucy Score, your sponsor, writes a series, Riley Thorn, which my wife actually loves. And it's very grounded in real world, but the main character happens to have this inherited clairvoyance, which she rather doesn't like. But that's it. But that would count. That would turn that into, if you like, paranormal romance. Although for me, there must be a lot of crossover people who read just contemporary romance. But
there is. But yeah, like my series, it's a real world setting, like a small town setting with magic. So
is everyone magic, or is it a secret magic?
It's out there. Like everyone knows, but there's also people who don't have magic. So it's like, I feel like I get a lot of contemporary readers who are like, I don't like paranormal. I've never read it. Or they've read it in the past. They don't want to. And their friends are like, you got to read Emerald Lakes. You got to read it. And then they'll read it and they'll be like, wow, I like that.
Yeah.
You know, cause I feel like it's just enough real world that it's not, that a lot of contemporary readers also like it.
Yes. Cause you could have a more extreme paranormal romance with, as you say, shifters and monsters and dragons and more, you know, as much fantasy as it is paranormal romance.
Yes. And I think that would cross over more into fantasy.
Okay.
You know, fantasy romance. But yeah, I mean, there's so many different ways you can take.
Yeah.
Normal, but.
Okay. So let's talk about your paranormal series. So the magic. Mm-hmm. What are the rules that you've set here? Because you are the god of your little world you've created here. What magic, what's the constraints, or is it unlimited?
So it's genetic, and each witch or mage is born with a certain affinity And those affinities are, for example, my main character is a green witch. So she's like plants, you know, the earth, flowers, stuff like that. There's a storm mage who like can control the weather. There's a shifter. He shifts into a panther. There's a fire mage. It's pretty self-explanatory. Yeah. You know, he can do fire. And then I have a cognitive mage who's like a mind reader and can like actually like get into people's heads and whatever. So the way my story is set up is these guys that are the main characters, they're actually, they work for a company as hitmen, like assassins. So they've been through all this special training with their affinity and their magic. And that's what leads them to town where they meet our female main character.
Okay. You don't want to date a cognitive magician, do you? You don't want to date someone who could read your mind.
Well, and that's why he ends up liking her so much, because for some reason he can't read her.
Ah, there you go. That's where you want. That opens a barrier. Okay, so that's the setting. And small town. A small town is such an important trope, isn't it, in romance? I mean, I think we're all drawn to it, regardless of whether it's romance or any other drama. You just love that idea of small town. It's got so many possibilities, I think, for relationship form, which you don't get in a big city. But yeah, so was that right from the beginning? You thought, I like reading it, I want to write it, small town?
Yes, and I'm from it's actually a village of like 1,000 people.
Wow, so you have villages. I didn't think America had, but we have villages in the UK, and it annoys me that there's never a slot in the American where you do addresses for the village than the town. But
I'm an actual village.
Wow.
Villager. And you know, I kind of wanted to model it after like the TV show Gilmore Girls, how they have the small town. And that show is just like so comforting and like cozy to so many people that they keep going back and rewatching it. So that was kind of the whole vibe I wanted to create.
Okay. And I know the village itself, in your case, or the small town, becomes a character in its own. Like I'm actually reading Lucy's big hit this year, Things We Never Got Over. And it's quite clear that she's created a town that's going to be a character in its own right.
Yes, absolutely. And I wanted the town to be, you know, full of quirky side characters. You know, there's two seer ladies who, you know, wear big gaudy jewelry and, you know, bright makeup. And I put a lot of effort into all of my side characters because I wanted every character in the book to matter and to like for people to be able to connect with all of them, basically. So, you know, whether it's comedic relief or, you know, just
remind me how many books in the series now.
There's five.
And are there going to be more?
I am going to do a second series at some point with the same characters, but like after the whole events of the first series.
Okay. So that's completed this timeline, if you like, the five.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, that's completed.
When it's romance, obviously a couple need to get together at some point. Spoiler alert.
Right.
And do you have the same person going through various iterations of relationships, like breaking up and finding somebody else, or do you have a new romantic coupling in each book?
It's the same set of characters.
Right.
In all books. And so it's reverse harem. So do you know what that is?
Of course. It's reverse harem. I forgot. There's multiple dudes around.
Right. You know, living the dream.
Yeah. Okay. Small town, multiple dudes, reverse harem. Okay. Yep. So there's a sort of dynamic that I wasn't really thinking about because I'm reading a more contemporary romance at the moment where it's a couple getting together.
Right.
So what's the attraction of reverse harem for you? Oh, that sounds like a dodgy question, isn't it, to ask? But...
I think it just adds to, you know, the whole escapism in reading. It adds another layer to romance. And it also gives me a chance I will say writing reverse harem is a lot harder than I was anticipating because I write multi POV. So every character gets their own chapters from their point of view. So it's really like deep diving into all of them, which, you know, it adds up. I think by the end of the fifth book, I had seven POVs to keep track of.
Wow.
And, you know, you want to make sure all their voices are different and that the reader doesn't have to flip back and see, okay, now whose POV is this again? You know, you just want to make well-defined characters. So that was hard for me, but I like a challenge. And when I'm reading to escape reality. And I just think that reverse harem like really levels that up.
Yes. Yeah. I was going to make a joke about unless you're in Utah, but it's the other way around then. It's a traditional harem. And that's just right. A very, very generalistic generalization yeah. about a very small community. But anyway, there you go. I'm a comedian. What can I say? So you've got your stories interconnected because it's reverse harem. So I can see how each book would have different turns. And I guess you have the men occasionally at loggerheads or tensions arising there. But there's got to be, in romance, there's got to be some substantial coming together, I assume, between a couple. How do you do that when it's reverse harem how do you do that?
Well, you give yourself five books to get it all out, you know? It's also good because, you know, there's always going to be one or two of the guys that are like, not sure about this. I don't know, you know, so that's fun to kind of like, you know, readers really like that. They see the guy from the beginning who's going to resist this, like he doesn't want this. And as it progresses, you know, they're like, by the time it happens, they're dying for it. They're like, we need this right now, you know? So yeah, it can be difficult to line it all up, but it eventually all happens.
And so in your world you've created is what's the proper word for it? Plural. Oh my God, I've forgotten the word for it. But multiple partners in a marriage or relationship, is that normalized or is this kind of secret thing?
It's normal.
Bigamy is for yeah. two when you've got two people. That's polygamy. Polygamy is the word I'm looking for.
Polyamory. Oh, yeah.
There
polyamory.
You go. Yeah. It's normal. Okay. Yes. And is it always one woman?
No.
Okay. Just in yeah. this case. Okay, gotcha. All right, so let's talk about how the books were received and what marketing you put into it. But you've obviously built a pretty loyal fan base. I can tell you just from the figures you gave us at the beginning. How did you set about doing that?
So when I first started, I just tried to get, you know, my name out there, my book, you know, the blurb for the first book in different Facebook groups. I got my pre-order up and I had another author help me set up a Facebook ad because I'd never done anything like that. So I started it at $2 a day when it was still a pre-order. And I heard from so many people, like, don't even bother with ads until your series is complete. People don't like that. I said, I'm not going to do that. Like I'm going to run an ad. So I think I had like 150 pre-orders on my first book, which, you know, people were like, that's amazing, you know, for a debut book. And I was happy with it. Cause like I said, I wasn't expecting to make a dollar, you know? But yeah, I really had a big social media presence with Instagram and Facebook. And just, you know, getting my name out there, really. And then in December, when the second book came out, I posted a TikTok video about my story of being laid off because of the pandemic, my second book coming out. And then I hit, I got a bestseller tag on my second book in my category of, it was like paranormal romance or something like that. And I posted about it and that video went viral and I got a lot of TikTok followers from that.
Wow.
So I think that really helped like kick it into another gear, you know?
It's funny how often TikTok comes up in the interviews that I do these days. Which is why we're all so interested in that platform, and even crusty old men like me are getting into it.
It's hard though, you know, because there's no real rhyme or reason to it. So,
yeah, well, you presumably have other people pushing your books on TikTok now.
I do, and that's why when I started, and I had other author friends that are like, I'm posting these videos, nothing's happening, like they're only getting 1,000 views, and I'm like, listen, this is a long game, like. You need to infiltrate BookTok, and eventually, like all these videos that you're posting and all the work you're putting in by getting your book out there, they will take over that work for you. And that's what's happened with my stuff. I don't post as much as I used to, just because I'm busy. But yeah, I see my books all over BookTok now because word got out, you know?
Yeah, but you laid the foundation for that, and you kept going, and then you get a break, because as you say, there's no rhyme or reason. I think it's Jane Ryan always says, you know, every time you do a TikTok, you enter the lottery, and then one of them gets going. But it's the same, you know, Amy Dawes and Colleen Hoover even, and Megan and Lucy and the Peckhams. Yeah. I see all of them, other people pushing their books more than I see them pushing their books now. But they've all laid the foundation first.
Yeah. Yep, you got to put the work in and not get frustrated. Like, just have fun doing it and realize, like, any bonus that you get from TikTok is just that. It's a bonus.
And it's, you know, free, apart from the time and work. There's no paid ads at the moment that are going to work on TikTok. By the way, if you think it's just romance authors, check out Adam Beswick on TikTok to see what authors and other genres are doing great work as well. And me, even when I've put my focus on it, I sell books through it.
Yeah.
Starting to do that again now that things have settled down. Oh, well, that's fantastic. And where are you today in terms, do you have a main list today? Do you have a Facebook group? How do you organize your readers?
Yes, I do have a mailing list. It's not huge, but that's because I really wanted it to be focused on people who want my newsletter, you know, not like... In the beginning, I did a lot of book funnels and stuff, and that was great to kind of like build it up, but I don't really do them anymore. So I have maybe like 5,000 subscribers to my newsletter, and I have a Facebook group that's getting close, I think, to 6,000 members. That's very active, and it's just such a fun group. Everybody's really nice. And I think that goes from, you know, they read Emerald Lakes, which is, everybody's very nice for the most part in that book. You know, that's the vibe I wanted. Be kind to everybody, accept people the way they are. So yeah, I have my Facebook group, and I started a Patreon.
Oh, okay.
And
what do the Patreon supporters get?
So they get like first looks at new covers, blurbs, book reveals. They get character art that I get commissioned.
Okay.
There's an audiobook tier where they get the audiobooks free once they come out. And then there's like a VIP level where they get to read what I'm writing as I write it.
Wow.
And that's weird.
Yes, that is weird. I don't think I could, I'd be so often going back and changing it. Okay, well, that's all sounds great, and you obviously work hard at the books themselves. Let's talk a little bit about the writing. I mean, you say it's a peaceful, loving vibe, but you did also mention they're hitmen, the guys. Yeah. So I guess there's some tension there. But do you plot each book? Do you plot the entire series, or do you discovery write?
I'm like in the middle of a plotter and a pantser.
Okay.
I don't even know what you call a planter.
Yeah, planter. There you go.
So I just have to know where that particular book is ending. I don't know where the series is going. I know that if I try too hard, like with, you know, this is going to happen and this person is going to do this and this, and I sit down to write it, I just blow it to smithereens. Like, it just doesn't work for me. So I just kind of let the characters guide the plot and fill in the holes. Like, this is one thing I know that needs to happen, and everything else that happens is just
whatever happens.
Yeah. Just let it flow.
And when you get to your stories at the end of the books, is there a cliffhanger? Is there or does each book is neatly sewn up?
There's always a cliffhanger.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which I'm hearing a lot more of. I mean, it wasn't that long ago people said, don't do that. It upsets the readers. But actually, very big, successful authors seem to do it quite regularly now.
It does upset them, but they keep coming back.
Yeah.
You know? And honestly, like, I know when, like, if you're watching a TV series, how does a TV show end?
Yeah.
An episode, you know, you want more. That's why you sit your butt in the chair all weekend and binge watch Stranger Things or, you know, whatever show it is. I just think that's a good marketing tactic.
Yeah, fair enough. And they do sell those episodes individually, don't they, on most streaming platforms. So there is a correlation there. Now, in terms of your editing, Britt, so I guess before you subscribe to the foundation, that would have been probably beyond your financial means, or since you awarded the foundation, but you are now working with one or two editors. How does that work with you?
So I have a content editor. She reads as I write, and I also have a copy and line editor that gets everything after me and my content editor are done. It goes to her. And she reads through that twice, and then it goes to a proofreader, and then it goes to ARC readers. So,
okay. So quite a process.
Yeah. And I mean, I've just found that works the best for me. I really enjoy having a content editor because I am ADHD. So it can be very hard for me if I start to get bored with details, you know, and like finer points. So when I'm writing, I'm just like, you know, get it all out. And then I can go back and she'll be like, but why? Why did he feel this way? Or, you know, describe this character more. Or, you know, it's just very helpful.
Yeah.
For my brain to have that. So.
Yeah. Finally, just to your current marketing setup, Britton, so you've completed that series. You're starting on a different timeline, same characters. Is that right?
In the future. I don't know when I'm going to do that.
Okay. So are you not writing at the moment?
I kind of started writing a new series that I haven't announced yet, but I did publish book one in a spinoff series. So it's the same world, but different characters. And that book is in Barnes & Noble.
Oh, wow. How did it get into Barnes & Noble?
I have no idea.
Oh.
It's just there.
But you haven't had it traditionally published, or they're picking it up through Ingram Spark or someone, or?
Yeah, I think I have like whatever that worldwide distribution is.
Expanded distribution. Okay.
Yes, that's it. I must have marked that when I uploaded it, and
yeah,
and it's in Barnes & Noble.
Wow. So there you go, from being laid off in the pandemic to walking past the Barnes & Noble and seeing your book in there.
Yeah.
That is...
I'm telling you, like, sometimes I just can't believe it.
Yeah, it's been a crazy ride, I imagine. But down to you, and obviously you found your writing niche, you found your readers, and you're supplying in a very old-fashioned capitalistic sense. Supply and demand is working here.
Yeah, because after, you know, that first year, I wrote all five books in a year.
Wow.
And then I was burnt out, you know, because it was just a lot, and it was a very emotional series. So I just feel like it took a lot out of me by the end of it. So I was like, okay, you know, now I have my ads running. They're working. I mean, to this day, book one still sits right around 1,000 in the store.
Right.
That's fine. Like that's great after almost 2 years.
That's amazing. You know? Yeah.
So that's just given me some time. Like we moved, we bought a new house in May and we moved. So I've just been taking my time and, you know, getting moved in, enjoying summer, And it's been really nice.
And is that Facebook ads mainly? Do you do any Amazon ads as well or any BookBub ads?
No, it's just Facebook.
Facebook ads, that's the one that drives for you. And in terms of your sort of targeting, do you use your mailing list and lookalikes or do you target other authors?
I target like romance novels or paranormal romance. I haven't had much luck with targeting other authors yet.
Okay.
My best results seem to be like keeping it pretty broad, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah.
And
you run all the ads yourself or do you have somebody there? Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
The secret sauce. Well, we're so excited for you, Britt. It's a brilliant story and obviously great for us to see somebody from the foundation. And you're not the only one, as you saw El Thorpe, she switched you onto it. But it's really great. But well done to you because you are the person who pulled all of that off.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And from where we're recording this in August, I guess we're going to see each other in a few weeks in Vegas again. So we'll catch up and...
I can't wait.
We might even be able to shake hands this year. Who knows what the rules will be.
Right.
Yeah, who knows. Britt, thank you so much indeed.
Thank you.
This is The Self-Publishing Show. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
There you go, Britt Andrews talking to me just a few days ago, actually. It's a very contemporaneous interview, to use a long word. And it's exciting. I think Britt's quite nervous, actually, I think, about coming onto the podcast. But she is, as you said, Mark, earlier, just a great example of that latent talent that sits there and needs to be unleashed. And we were partly able to help her do that, to unleash that talent. And we have set Britt Andrews on the world, and there's no stopping her now.
Yeah, I think it's going to give them the tools. You need to be able to write. She can clearly do that. And you need to have the drive to want to succeed. And we can't manufacture that. You need to have that as well. So you need to have writing talent and determination and energy. Those things we can't really help with. What we can do is provide guides as to how you can go from having a book, a good book, and the determination to do well with it, to actually getting into the hands of thousands of readers. That we can help with that last bit. And we show Britt how to do it, and off she goes. And she'll be, I imagine, some kind of Lucy Score type territory, perhaps. Lucy took the course 5 years ago, and is now one of the biggest selling indies in the world. And who knows? Maybe Britt will follow that same path. She's certainly on the way to it. So we'll check in with her in a couple of years, and she'll be in some enormous mansion somewhere.
Yes. Yeah, she won't let us in. There'll be security on the gates by then. But her car will all be one colour.
And the heating will work.
And the heating will work. Yeah, she talked about her car being multiple colours, and I remember that from Better Call Saul, when he got his German Mercedes, we started working with a company. One of the aspects, the indicators of his success was his car was just one colour. Okay, right, that's it. The course that propelled Britt to where she is today is Ads for Authors, and it is open for 48 hours from this point. So your last chance until next year, 2023, if you want to hop onto that. It is at selfpublishingformula.com/ads-for-authors. Mark Dawson, that is it. It's raining here. This is the first time it's rained since I got back from South Africa. South Africa? Where was I? California. In South Africa. In fact, it didn't rain before we went to California. Honestly, it's been so parched in the UK. If this happened... I mean, have you got a hose pipe ban where you are? You've got a swimming pool. You've got a reservoir built into your house.
Yeah, we don't have a ban, but no, we've got rain as well. It's been raining, I think, most of the day so far. So I'm quite pleased, actually. If we'd done this podcast half an hour ago, in fact, they're just looking down there now. The farmer has brought some cows across from the other side of the river over the bridge, which is just there. And they were very, very noisy not long ago. So if anyone heard any mooing, and there is a couple that look quite irritated right now, it'll be... That'll be why the cows are just kind of milling around doing cow things.
There's an irritated cow outside your window.
It's a bit partridge, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Cows off a bridge.
Yeah, we won't do the quotes now. Good. Okay, that's it. Thank you very much indeed. All that remains for me to say is it's a goodbye from him.
And a goodbye from me. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Get show notes, the podcast archive, and free resources to boost your writing career at selfpublishingshow.com. Join our thriving Facebook group at selfpublishingshow.com/Facebook. Support the show at patreon.com/selfpublishingshow. And join us next week for more help and inspiration so that you can make your mark as a successful indie author. Publishing is changing, so get your words into the world and join the revolution with The Self-Publishing Show.